Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Chris Hannity joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
Yeah, here comes the chorus. Here we go. Kisses, Ace Frehley, solo single, Back in the New York Groove. In honor of the New York Knicks, rousing come from behind win in Madison Square Garden.
So you had a, you did your your rankings of Grizzlies and their value. But since you started with that, let's start with that. Two collapses in the end there, the Sixers and
the
Lakers.
Yeah, I think the Sixers thing was more of a collapse. I mean, the Lakers had a big lead, but they had a big lead midway through the game. Like, you play 48 minutes for a reason. That was a real nip and tuck back and forth, you know, down the final minutes to me with the Lakers thing. Whereas the Sixers, like, you know, I think there were, I saw some clip on Twitter, like the local broadcast or whatever had, like, you know, they had hammer nail coffin that game. Yeah, they said something like, let's get back up the turnpike and, like, you want to win one on the road, and you now let's get back on the turnpike and let's win this series.
This
and
that is was when they were up five. Careful.
This is when they were up five with 40 seconds left. Oops.
That's too much. You can't hammer nail a coffin up five with 40, whatever. But
that was a crazy. I'll be interested to see the last 2 minute report, because that was like a just like. Like, let's put the whistles in the pockets and, like, all bets are off. Like, it's street fight time in the last 40 seconds, you know?
So to take those, I mean, obviously, you know, Kyle Lowry misses one or two. That didn't help. You got Brunson's three that looks like it's not going to go in.
It's sort of like that Kawhi three that he hit against the Sixers. I mean, this is like Sixers history where he like, bounces up and then falls in.
Yeah. Decides because of the tilt of the moon or something to drop in. After that, let's take the inbounds pass and the timeouts. Do you have a...
So I went back and rewatched that. I watched this game live, but I went back and rewatched the last minute this morning. And I was looking at Nick Nurse. And so there's two different moments in which a timeout could be called. I think on the first moment is on the inbounds.
Right.
And the second moment is after it's inbounded and Maxi has the ball on the floor. The first moment, he didn't really call a timeout. It was a wishy-washy. You can see him, he puts his hands up, and then you can see him second-guessing it, and then he brings them down. He didn't really call a timeout on the inbounds. When it was inbounded and Maxi hit the floor, he does turn to the ref, immediately signal timeout. And either the ref didn't see it or they didn't think he had possession or whatever. I feel like rewatching that, you know, it's easy to do like after the fact and right. You know, it's not in the heat of the moment. There's not all the chaos around you. I feel like they probably should have gotten a timeout.
You think Maxi still had possession when he was calling timeout?
Yeah, I think the second he hits the floor, Nurse signaled timeout. I think they probably should have gotten a timeout at that precise second. But like, there's chaos going on.
There's chaos going on, right? And you've allowed this to anyway. So all right. So then you've got the missed three, and then you've got Hartenstein.
The offensive rebound by Hartenstein, and then the block at the other end. That's big time plays in the last minute of that game.
Yeah, and the Anunoby pass to find was good. And then he nails, and then he drops in the other one. Is Hartenstein on our list, by the way?
Oh, yeah. But you know, it's one of those things. Any individual circumstance is unlikely, and that's one because he's going to be a free agent, and the Grizzlies can't sign him in free agency because the most they're going to be able to offer is probably the taxpayer mid-level, which is like $5 million. And even if they, like, you know, said goodbye to Luke Kennard and cleared a full mid-level, I don't think he just signs outright somewhere else for that. So that's Bishop get a sign and trade situation.
So Embiid, of course, says we're the better team. We're going to come back and win. Are they the better team?
If Joel Embiid is healthy, if they are healthy, if both teams are fully healthy, and I'd even throw Julius Randle back out. Both right. rosters are fully healthy. Yes, the Philadelphia is a better team. But that's not the case. I thought Melton was going to play this series. Melton's not back, and I think they need him. That bench is not, you know, super deep. And Embiid, there was a at the end of it, you could see Embiid. There was a shot at the very end after the buzzer. You see Embiid's eyes, and then he right. and I felt bad for him. And I'm at the point with him, I guess, you know, if he's the one saying we're going to win the series, I guess he's going to be out there game three and they're going to try to win the series. I watch this and I think he's not healthy and this is over. And he should be thinking, people should be thinking more about him walking comfortably at age 50 than trying to win this series now down 0-2.
It is amazing. 39 minutes, and it clearly is not himself, but still 34 and 10. The truth of the matter is,
I just worry about long-term damage on him. You know? He's playing hurt.
He's playing better than Brunson. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not about how well he's playing. It's about he is playing injured.
He is playing injured, exactly. And then the Lakers, if LeBron had said we're the better team, that's just clearly not true. Like, they are cooked because they are down the stretch, Denver 7-for-7. They do what they do.
If you want to feel bad for the Lakers, and I choose not to, but if you want to feel bad for the Lakers, like, if they were in any other series in the West, they might be the better team. They might be the better team in any of these other series. That team's pretty good, mostly because they have LeBron. LeBron James is still amazing.
Right.
He's, I don't know, 38, 30, whatever he is. Down the stretch of that game, he just pulls up, cans two threes in a row. Then he's getting to the rim, and he had that block earlier on Jamal Murray. LeBron James is still great.
Great.
But Denver's a better team, and Jokic at this point is the better player. And Jokic and Murray both got going at the same time. And when they're both going at the same time, that's the hardest thing in the NBA to stop. That's why they won a title last year. I mean, they got good coaching and good role players around them. But it's really those two. Jokic can do everything. And Murray got into a rhythm of just finding open spots and just rising up and knocking down shots. And, like, there are better guards than Jamal Murray. I don't know if there's a better guard to just be operating as the number two guy to Nikola Jokic. It's like a perfect fit. He doesn't have to do everything. He just has to, like, dart around and can shots, you know?
A first playoff buzzer beater ever by a Canadian, just so you know.
Sorry, Dylan.
First playoff buzzer beater ever by a Canadian. So that one, it is amazing. Six straight losses in the playoffs, average margin of victory, 6 points. So
they had the graphic at one point where Jokic, that was his fourth 2010 playoff game.
God.
The only players who've ever done that in the playoffs, it's him, it's Kevin Garnett, it's Tim Duncan, it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and it's, you know, shout out Dave Cowens. Of course, Dave Cowens is a Hall of Famer, too.
Right, yeah.
But still, like, you know, that's quite the list.
All right, so we completed the list of ranking Grizzlies players in value. This is according to their contract and everything else, not just who's the best, but and so we did the bottom nine last time, and so now we start at 8 with Santi Aldama. He's got 1 year left at $4 million, $5.9 million qualifying for the next year. And it feels like, what does it feel like is going to happen with his contract?
I don't know. He and Kennard was the last player on the first installment, and Aldama is the first player on the second installment. And those two guys are sort of the pivot point for the roster to me, because there's uncertainty both. Kennard with the team option, and Aldama is already locked into a good salary number next season. I think you're very happy to have Santi Aldama for $4 million next season. But he is eligible for a contract extension this summer. And given their tax situation and given you're just not sure what his long-term role is, I don't think he has established that he and Jaren Jackson are a good starting combo. I don't know if that's been entirely ruled out, but it has certainly not been established. Right. And given you're looking to add a big, and you have Jaren and Brandon Clark on long-term deals, I just don't know if they're going to be able to find a number they're comfortable with extending Aldama that Aldama's comfortable signing. And if you're not going to lock into a long-term situation with him this summer, you don't have to do him because he's still under contract next year and a good number. But I think that puts him in play as someone you would definitely consider moving.
And as you point out, he brings size, he brings shooting, and he's only 23.
Oh, yeah, he's a good player. He's a good player and a good deal. But yeah. I just don't know the long-term role is for him and what you're willing to pay for that.
Okay. So then what's interesting is number seven is Marcus Smart.
This was one I struggled with.
I was going to ask.
You can flip a coin.
I was going to ask. Seven is Marcus Smart, and six is Brandon Clark. And by the way, that speaks incredibly well of Brandon Clark, and because a year at the time of the injury, we would have said he had negative value, right, because of the injury. The fact that he's come back the way that he has, you now have him over Marcus Smart.
Yeah, and honestly, there's so many different ways to do this.
Right.
And so if you narrowed it to strictly this is a trade value ranking,
right,
I might have Marcus Smart ahead of Brandon Clark, but it's not. It's value to the Grizzlies.
Right.
And value to the Grizzlies both as players and as trade commodities and just the
I
whole
see,
shebang.
Right. Marcus Smart, just contractually, is $20 million each of the next 2 years.
Right.
Right? Brandon Clark, $12.5 million. And then he's got two more after that, right?
Yeah, and it's a flat contract.
He's got 3 years. Yeah. $12.5 million for a year for the next 3 years.
I guess what I came down to ultimately, Clark is 2 years younger with more and more year of control on a contract that's almost half the size. And I think, and we'll see what happens after the draft and what else you come up with. But as the roster is set right now today, Clark is... They've developed other options other than, like, Vince Williams Jr. may be right. as good as Marcus, better than Marcus Smart at the same stuff, a right. lot of the same stuff. That is not the case with Brandon Clark on this roster. So I think if you were playing a playoff series right now and your 18 players are healthy, Brandon Clark may be as or more likely to be in your closing lineup than Marcus Smart is.
One of the things I was interested about is, as you point out, Marcus Smart didn't spend much time playing the role that he was brought in to play.
Nine games. He played 20 total, 11 as a starting guard during John Morant's suspension, and nine, I don't know if every nine was starting at the three, but nine in more that role of a supplementary player around.
So what did we learn in that small, how was he in those nine games?
He was great. It worked great. It's nine games, but it worked great. His numbers were good. The team's numbers were terrific with him on the floor. They won. It all looked great. Those nine games looked like what the Grizzlies envisioned when they signed Marcus Smart. It's nine games, but to the degree that they were able to put him in the role they envisioned having him in, it all looked great.
You included the
it did sentence, not look great those first 11.
You included the sentence that his return is quote unquote not a sure thing.
Well, I'm not speaking for the team. This is just me looking at the game board and seeing. You know, Vince Williams has emerged. What if in the draft you look up and you think the best player to take is Reed Shepherd or Stephon Castle? What if there's a trade option for a center that you're going to have to, you know, move some significant salary to do?
Right.
I think, as far as I can tell, the Grizzlies really like Marcus Smart and are totally in on the concept of Marcus Smart and are likely to bring Marcus Smart back. Maybe to them they think they're certain to bring Marcus Smart back. I can see the game board shifting and circumstances developing that could potentially change that. I don't think that's likely. Right.
Okay, so then we get five and four. Five is G.G. Jackson, $1.9 million this next year, and then two more after that. Vince Williams Jr., $2.1 million, and then two more after that.
Yeah, this was another sort of tough call for, you know, it doesn't matter ultimately, but to the degree that I'm putting things in order, I sort of...
Vince, you rank Vince above G.G.
Yeah, I think ultimately... This list is not about next season. It's not about their careers. It's about the Grizzlies. The degree the Grizzlies sort of control the situation. So it's really about the next 3 years because they're both basically on the same contract.
Right.
And so who means more to the Grizzlies over the next three seasons? That could be G.G. Jackson. But as of right now today, I just give Vince Williams the edge. I think Gigi's personality and his scoring were such, and the recency of it, because Vince Williams didn't play the last few weeks, I think people have forgotten how good Vince Williams was in the totality of his play in terms of impacting winning. And I just think he's set up. I think he should probably be the starter next season. He probably won't be, but he's set up to play a major role.
Well, you said
in terms of winning basketball next season.
You went a prediction here. You said we'll lead the team in total minutes next year.
Yeah, we'll see about that. I think I feel like that's a decent kind of. It's not an obvious thing.
It's out along the line a little bit. Yeah,
I said total minutes for a reason because I'm thinking about how many games you're going to play.
Other people will miss. So not per game. Minutes,
yeah, I'm not saying don't necessarily play more minutes per game, but I think he'll play 30 minutes a game, and I think he's more likely to play 75 games than, you know, John Morant is or whatever.
The other thing you pointed out in this ranking was GG had some numbers that were less than stellar. His scoring fourth in the among rookies and whatever else, but he had some numbers there that were not
great. GG Jackson were a 27-year-old fifth-year NBA player, and he had the season he had, yep, we would not be as excited. And there's a reason you wouldn't be. You shouldn't be as excited, right? It's all contextual. But the rebounding numbers were mediocre. The passing numbers were mediocre. The defense, you know, the on-court, off-court team impact stuff was mediocre. The scoring efficiency, other than corner three-point shooting, was mediocre. He just turned 19, and he's generating shots. Like I think he's an extremely talented pure scorer with the ability to do lots of other stuff in his game, but it is very early in a process with him.
All right, and then we got the big three, and the order is Jaren 3, Dez 2, Ja 1. Jaren has owed $25.3 million this year and then has one more after that. Dez, $34 million this coming year and then four more after that.
This will be the first year of his
five-year extension. And then Ja, $36.7 million and then three more. So you've got... Yeah. It is interesting. You've got this looming Jaren thing for 2 years.
But you got your backcourt locked up for a long time.
4 years.
A long time.
Of the two of them together, right. Which is terrific. I don't know what there is to say about those. I was interested.
I didn't say as much because I'd
Well, you'd written a lot about Jaren.
Yes. I kept it short on those three.
You'd written a lot about Jaren. Dez, I thought a couple things interesting in your commentary there. First of all, the idea that he is elite at finishing at the rim is crazy.
That was the big, if you look at like year-over-year stuff for him, that's the thing that jumps out the most in terms of an improvement is that he was up to 68% at the rim, which I forget the percentile, but on cleaning the glass for a combo guard, it's like 90th percentile
it's
or whatever.
Nuts! The guy is a short arm.
And it's not because he's rising up and dunking stuff.
Right.
He's having to like shoot things at odd angles to get shots up over longer defenders, and he's really honed his feel for finishing again in traffic and finishing contested shots around the rim. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And then the second thing, though, the worry, and I think this is the worry, is the injury stuff has now 2 years in a row. And some of it's like back, you know? Like, backs are mysterious things.
Yeah, and he's been wearing like a brace or a warming pad. Maybe it's not a brace, a warming pad, I think it is. Around, you know, his back, around his midsection, like, you know, during when he's not playing for like a couple of years now. And so I think that's a preventative maintenance or whatever. But there's like a reason he's doing that. Not every player's doing that, you know?
Yeah. All right. You can read that piece over at the Daily Memphian. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.